After being known to the public as the second oldest daughter of Al and Tipper Gore, Kristen Gore is taking on a new public identity, novelist. Her new book, Sammy's Hill, is about a subject she knows well, life on Capitol Hill. The main character, Samantha Sammy Joyce, is a young healthcare analyst for a U.S. senator from Ohio. The novel follows Sammy's political and personal life as she starts dating a rival senator's speechwriter. Kristen Gore was born in 1977. She graduated from Harvard, where she wrote for the Harvard Lampoon. She's also written for the animated TV series Futurama. Let's start with a reading from Sammy's Hill. Sammy has just spent the night with the rival senator's speechwriter, breaking her long-standing policy of never sleeping with anyone on the first date. But she's more worried about having just violated a political rule about dating.
RG had just warned me to be wary of all Bramin staffers. I was now lying naked in bed with one of them, which suggested I'd let my guard down just a tad. Had I just slept with some sort of enemy? Had James Carville and Mary Madeline felt this way after their first night together? Even if they had, they'd clearly managed to make their relationship work, and Aaron and I had the advantage of working for people who were supposedly on the same side. I decided not to dwell any more on the negatives because I wanted to stay in my pleasantly glowing good mood, and the night really had been fun.
That's Kristen Gore reading from her new novel, Sammy's Hill. Kristen, welcome to Fresh Air. This reading is about your main character and a man she has just slept with for the first time. So tell us about who each of the characters are.
Well, Sammy is the main character in the book, and she is 26 years old. She's new to D.C. from Ohio and has moved there and is working for a senator from her home state, Senator Robert Gary, who she calls R.G. She has been warned by him to stay away from the staff of another senator, Senator Bramin, because they're rivals and sort of Bramin's crew is not to be trusted. She has met Bramin's speechwriter, a man named Aaron, and been very intrigued by him, and despite her boss's warnings, has gone out on a date with him and now has found herself waking up with him the next morning.
So what are some of the hazards that you think face politically involved single people in Washington? It's certainly something you've thought about for this book and must have also thought about in life itself.
Sure. Well, it was fun to explore it in the fictional world because I did grow up in D.C. and knew so many people who worked on Capitol Hill. And it's an interesting place because it has this reputation that I think I understand why people see it as sort of stiff and boring and a place where old people don't get anything done, but that's not really the D.C. I know, and it's also a place where all these young people flock to try to change the world, and it's and they are doing that in with this backdrop of, you know, national power, and there's all this energy and activity all the time that's very exciting, but also, a lot of them are in their 20s and 30s. A lot of them are single, and there's a huge social scene because they're all thrust together. You know, there's no sort of bride and groom seating in the House and Senate office buildings. You're right next to people from different parties, and you end up interacting all the time. And so that leads to all sorts of strange friendships and romances, and I just wanted to explore that a little bit because it's, I think, a unique part of D.C.
Now, I think when you're growing up in a political family, you have to develop a thick skin. You can't survive in the political world without one. Was it ever just emotionally difficult for you, particularly when your father was running for president, to watch him being attacked for everything from his policies to being stiff?
Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, no one wants to hear that about their dad or a loved one, you know, and usually in any other life, you don't often get barraged with, you know, something like that. So, yeah, it can be very tough. But again, you have to just know it comes with the territory. And I know what he's really like. I know how great he is. And that's the only thing that really matters to me. I wish everyone knew him the way I did. But luckily, a lot of people feel the same way, too.
During the era when he was running for president, one of the big things was like, no, Al Gore is too stiff. Did you give him any advice about that?
You know, it's hard because I think people get these, particularly in politics, they get this these images grafted onto them, and then it just gets perpetuated, you know, kind of takes on a life of its own, whether or not it's accurate mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. not all the time. So that is a lesson I learned, and you just kind of have to go with it. But I, you know, again, he, I think, is, I didn't have to give him advice because I don't want my national leaders to be stand-up comics. You know, I want my national leaders to be serious and to know what to do during times of crisis and times of prosperity to bring us forward. You know, I mean, I think that what's important in that world is your ideas and your commitment and the reasons you're in it. And so I never doubted any of those things with my father. And so that other stuff was just kind of silly to me.
Where were you during the recount era? And how do you think you were changed by that experience?
I was home with my parents. I actually took a leave of absence from Futurama, which was the show I was writing on at the time, because I was sort of useless as a comedy writer for just those 36 days. And the show was thankfully very supportive and let me do that. But it was an emotional roller coaster, definitely. And the whole time, even as different things went up and down and back and forth, and there was something new happening every day, I was so sure that all the votes were going to be counted that it was surprising to me that was halted. I hadn't factored that in as a possibility. So I was pretty shocked. But, you know, also really proud of my dad's decision to, in such a crazy time when no one knows how to resolve that. I mean, it was really unprecedented. You have to respect the law. I mean, it's dangerous not to. And no matter what you think the court's motivations are, it's the Supreme Court. And I was raised to respect that. And so, you know, I look to him to be a leader in that time, both for me personally and for the country, and he did not disappoint me.
Now, your mother in the 80s and probably early 90s was particularly famous for being co-founder of the Parents Music Resource Council, mm-hmm. which was a group predominantly of mothers who, you know, were concerned that lyrics in popular music had offensive sexual language that would be damaging for their children to hear. So this is a group that talked to Congress, campaigned for stickers on records that would warn of explicit lyrics. What was that period like for you? I mean, kids want to listen to what they want to listen to. They don't really want their parents involved. And I could see how it could have been almost embarrassing to have your mother campaigning for control over exactly the kind of thing that kids want to control themselves.
Right. You know, it's funny because I think my sister, who's 4 years older than me, had a little bit of a tougher time with it because she was about 13. But, you know, I was 9 and not quite at the, you know, I was still listening to nothing too racy. I don't think maybe it's different now, but in the 80s, 9-year-olds certainly like music, but they're not into sort of the hard edge stuff. But I, as I got older, still had to deal with the sort of misrepresentation of a lot of what my mom was trying to do, because people talked about censorship, which it wasn't at all. You know, it was voluntary labels. And so that was difficult because I just felt that that it got, the way it was talked about tended to sort of misrepresent it, and then that would get perpetuated. And also, I just knew my mom as someone who loves music and loves creativity and art and in all forms.
Did she try to control what you listened to?
Oh, no, she didn't, actually. She was very...
Did you listen to hip-hop that had the kind of lyrics that she wouldn't have liked?
You know, yeah, I think we went through a phase where we learned all the lyrics to Colors, and which was a rap song at the time. I think my sister taught us all the lyrics when we were 9, and so we would kind of recite them in the van just to let her know that we knew what was going on. I think as a lot of people who were criticizing her at the time got older and had kids of their own and realized what was out there, that a lot of them have actually come to her and said, oh, I'm so sorry that I didn't really understand what you were trying to do that then. And now that I have a kid and see everything, I like having these tools. So I think that's gratifying for her. And, you know, it's all been a while ago now.
Now, when your father was on Saturday Night Live, you wrote one of the sketches for him, right?
Yes, I did.
How did you get to do that?
Well, I in college, I went to Harvard and I wrote for the Lampoon. That's how I sort of got into comedy writing and got the idea to do it as a career. And a lot of my fellow Lampooners after school applied to different shows, and four of them were on Saturday Night Live. And so they asked me to be a guest writer because I had been working in comedy. I was at Futurama and was working on another show at that point with Nathan Lane. And so, and I was in LA, but I went to New York for the week. And I think they thought, you know, I know my dad better than they do, and I'm in comedy writing, and so why not join the team? And that was really, really fun for me because I think I would have been terrified under other circumstances just because of Saturday Night Live's, you know, reputation and the way that they work there. But the people that I knew from college who I had been writing with before were very welcoming, and I had a really fun time. It was a great week.
So what did you write?
I wrote the introduction, the monologue that went into the Bachelor parody where he ended up you know, handing out roses to potential vice presidential candidates. that was the sketch that I worked on, and it was really, I thought he did a great job with it. It was sort of fun because The Bachelor was, it's sort of now, and I don't know what incarnation it's in now, but at the time it was new and kind of everyone was tuned into it and couldn't believe sort of the new influence of reality television, and particularly that show. And so it was fun to kind of put my dad in that context, and he ended up in one scene in a hot tub with the actor playing Joe Lieberman to sort of drinking champagne, and he was the one that won the rose. So it was fun to be able to get to sort of comment on this Bachelor phenomenon and put my dad in there and mix in politics. I really enjoyed all that whole mixture.
Now, one of the sketches on the show was a parody of the famous Kiss.
Yeah, I did work on that one too.
Did you at the convention? And in this one, like your father playing himself, and I forget which actress playing your mother, Tipper Gore, you know, have that kiss, but it becomes this kind of like mad smooch fest.
It was my mom. My mom did it.
Oh, it was your mom.
It was the very beginning of the show, and it was my actual mom and my actual dad. Yeah, sort of reenacting it, but obviously.
So you co-wrote that.
Yeah, I did. You know, I sort of helped out with that. There was not a lot of dialogue because they were mainly kissing, but there was some.
So was it hard to sell your parents on the idea of doing this?
No, it actually wasn't. I mean, they both love Saturday Night Live and were big fans of the show and are completely, they have great senses of humor and good senses of humor about themselves, too. And they were very game for it. They thought it was hilarious. My dad actually still says when people say, what would you do differently in 2000? He said, I definitely would have kissed Tipper longer.
How involved or emotionally involved are you in the presidential race now?
Well, I am involved to the extent of, you know, being tuned into it and watching it and doing whatever I can to make people realize the stakes and to play an active role by voting and by, you know, educating themselves about what's going on. And it's interesting this time not being so intimately involved, then I get to see sort of that a lot of what goes on isn't personal. It just happens, you know, no matter who's running. And that's valuable for me, too, to have this other perspective, because for so long I was looking at it and looking out from the inside, and it's different this time around.
Kristen Gore, her new novel is called Sammy's Hill.